So our next speakers are Dennis and Braylon. Dennis Giese is a researcher with a focus on the security and privacy of Internet of Things devices, the IoT. He calls himself a robot collector, as his current vacuum robot army consists of more than 65 devices. Meanwhile, when her robot vacuum gave up the ghost, she took the opportunity to tear it apart. We haven't yet informed Dennis's army, but Braylon is more than willing and capable to go deep and figure out what makes them tick. So here is Dennis and Braylon with sucking dust and cutting grass, reversing robots and bypassing security. Let's welcome them warmly from Hamburg.
All right, thank you for being here. I know in room number one, there is like a slightly more interesting talk. I would like to go there, but I mean, now we have this talk here, so I had to be here. All right, so welcome to the presentation. We're talking today about sucking dust, cutting grass, and slightly change breathing air, reversing robots and bypassing security. I'm Dennis, this is Braylon, and before we start, just want to do a quick introduction. So I'm a security researcher, which you heard. I do primarily wireless and embedded security and privacy. Vacuum robot collector, it's 65 is true. I have actually more IoT devices than that. It's like around 400, I think, by now. And those are all brands. So basically, if I can buy devices, I just spend my credit card like a good American. So buy a lot of devices. And I like to reverse engineer any kind of interesting devices in particular. So right now it's robots, but I also do smart speakers or like flash memory. Some of the projects which I do, which are kind of related, are the reverse engineering of flash and forensics on it. So basically, I look at embedded devices, look if I can extract something from flash memory, but I look also at flash memory itself, if I can, for example, manipulate a firmware on like flash and do mean things. Some time ago, I did a paper about Amazon Echo, where I did some forensics, and this, let's say it wasn't very good for Amazon in this case. The other project that I run is robotinfo.dev. It's kind of like a systematic analysis of robots. So I look at hardware, software, sensors. Primarily I focus on security and privacy. So I have actually no idea about the cleaning performance. So I just, you know, buy them to hack them. And this side is also like keeping track of firmware changes. So this is like if vendors are patching something, we will see it. One of the sources for this database in the background is like basically I emulate devices or I kind of, you know, tamper with the app a little bit. But this is giving us some data for further research. And so as you can see, this is like one of the racks where if I need to get a robot, I just go there, grab one. If I need to test it, if I'm done, I put it back. But I don't have to distribute it everywhere to clean it.
Oops. Hi, I'm Braylon. During the day, I hack things for Leviathan Security Group, but this talk does not reflect their views, and this is personal research. At night, I do security research things. My general focus is application security and APIs. Dennis is a brilliant hardware hacker, but needed some help with the application security stuff, so he brought me in. My first robot victim was a Yeti robot in 2021. During COVID lockdowns, it broke and I decided to take it apart, and that kind of sparked my interest in hardware hacking. So yeah, now just hardware hacking for fun generally. Robots, cameras, whatever I come across that seems interesting.
All right, let's talk about the goals of this talk. So generally, I like to give this kind of talks to give people understanding about the security privacy risks of IoT devices. There's always like some information out there, but people are not sure like what's exactly going on. Then I would like to give you some overview about vacuum robot hacking and tell you like, you know, what kind of vulnerabilities you can expect and hope to potentially find them. Typically with this kind of talk, the goal is basically to get root access on, you know, the vacuum robots or like any kind other kind of robots without disassembling, so without touching screws. So this is like the big goal of like our research. As some of you might have figured out that there's a lot of vacuum robot talks over the last couple of years, which I did, always people asking like, okay, which company is basically impacted this time? Is it Xiaomi, Roborock, Dreamy, you know, who is the poor victim? And I can now say that today's victim is Equivox, which is a very big company. So, some disclaimers, as always. We don't claim that any vendors use sensors to spy on you, but they could technically do it. We cover primarily physical attacks or proximity attacks, so we touch devices or we are round devices, so we are not really talking too much about, you know, hacking, you know, APIs and like mass hacking with devices. Generally, surprisingly, a lot of vendors are affected of security and privacy problems, and it's independent of size, it's independent of origin, so it doesn't matter if you're from China or if you're from US, and it's also independent of market size. So in my previous talks, I was talking about Xiaomi, Roborock, and Dreamy, and in this talk, we're kind of focusing on Equifax. So the important thing is, this research is part of just private projects, so it's not sponsored by any companies, organizations, and any statements we make are private ones and are not representing any organization. So, devices which we talk basically today briefly are these. So as you see, this is like most of the current ones from Equifax. Everything which is underlined has a camera, everything which is like italic, it has some sort of microphone or smart assistant. And we are talking also about the sub-brand of Equifax, which is Yeti, so basically it covers all of their devices. However, we focus only on devices which run some kind of Linux. There's some very, very cheap ones which have some ESP32 and no sensors, so we're not really interested in that, so we want to, you know, get something powerful. All right, so this talk is a result of like 5 years of research and experiments, not the whole time, but, you know, like on and off. And we are technically not the first one who look into hacking Equifax robots, but the previous projects we've been basically focusing on slightly upper focuses, like for example, to emulate the cloud and to kind of make them work with different other things. The work is not finished yet, so there's a lot of devices out there and there's a lot of things which we don't understand yet, so it would be great if other people could also take a look at it. And the vendor is technically unaware of our findings until today, so they might have noticed in the past that we did some things because the robots are very chatty and, you know, sent up back log files, but we didn't tell them necessarily about problems until today, actually. So there might be updates coming soon, and, you know, maybe if you want to root your device, maybe don't do updates in the next couple of days. Generally, this kind of research is a collaborative effort, so typically if you go to conferences and meet people, for example, with Timster, and we were hacking stuff at the Nilcon, like cameras of robots. With other people, I was at the CCC camp this year, and I brought a vacuum robot, a lawn mowing robot, even though I don't have a lawn, and we were just, you know, hacking stuff. So it's always like kind of like a thing which is like in progress with multiple people. All right, let's talk about the motivation of why we're doing this. So why do we want to root devices? By the way, those are other stacks. We want to play with cool hardware, and you will see in this talk today, these kind of devices are very, very cool hardware, and you know, you get a very nice package, which is very, you know, very cool. The other thing is, these kind of devices are talking home constantly, and we try to disconnect, you know, stop them from, you know, sending a lot of data from our homes. A lot of people, especially in Germany, try to run the devices with custom smart home software like FIM or Home Assistant. So we try to figure out ways how we can do that. With right to repair coming up, we need to have some way to diagnose broken devices. So if a device is broken and it's not working, most of the time it's very hard to figure out what's exactly wrong. And if you have some root access on the device, we can potentially figure out what's going on. And the other thing is, we want to verify privacy claims of companies. As we noticed from the past, let's say not all the companies are truthful, completely truthful of, like, you know, what their privacy policy is. Why don't we trust IoT companies generally? Well, IoT devices have a very special feature. They're connected to the internet and they connect to your home network, so they technically have access to everything which is in your home. The communication to the cloud is typically encrypted and you have no real idea what is transmitted. So you see just encrypted traffic, you have no clue. From our own experience, we know that developing secure hardware and software is extremely hard. So even if the vendor is not necessarily malicious, they might do some kind of weird, you know, mistake which causes like security issues and many people get impacted. In the past, a lot of vendors got caught with very shady behavior, so that's never a reason, you know, to not trust them. And we also have done a lot of research of IoT, so we kind of get paranoid, you know, by default if we see devices. So. One example I was working on last year, exactly 1 year ago, was where iRobot got caught, where they were taking pictures of users' robots, they're giving them to gigaworkers in Venezuela, which they've been labeling them for machine learning. And iRobot kind of tried to defend themselves, like, yeah, these were test devices. The users kind of knew in some, you know, in, on page 25 of the terms of, you know, service. So it's not an issue. But it just showed kind of that this is a scary situation. And I was part of that because I kind of have so many robots that I kind of saw on the right. There's like this one small light at the stove that this is an iRobot because I have this perspective so I can figure that out. One interesting thing is, as soon as the article was like, kind of prepared, or like the mails were sent out to the companies, a lot of companies panicked actually and started to change firmware, apps, and privacy policies. So it had a real impact, basically, our work had a real impact. One thing which is a little bit more scary is that the CEO of iRobot a couple years ago said, like, hey, maybe you should collect maps of users and just sell them to, you know, insurance companies, you know, realtors. And they say that quite officially, and it's not very, you know, encouraging that Amazon tries to buy iRobot nowadays, not because of their nice devices, but because of all the data which we have. So it's a kind of a scary situation, so we should maybe take a closer look to that. Another thing which is kind of interesting for me personally, who's working on this project for quite a long time, devices get more and more sensors, and nowadays we're kind of used to have devices with cameras. But very recently, like one year ago, they started to get microphones. So what are risks of devices with cameras? Well, devices might store pictures indefinitely, and a lot of them do, both in the cloud and locally. Especially used devices might be very problematic. So if you buy like a vacuum robot or any other device with like a camera and a microphone from Amazon Marketplace or eBay, you have no idea if the previous owner did install like a rootkit onto it. As the new owner, you have typically no way to verify that the software is actually clean. So as a result, you might have some malicious device in your network, which is kind of a problem. So rooting might be the only way to verify that the device is actually clean. The question is like, well, can we rely on certificates? And all the companies which have devices with cameras and microphones, they have all kinds of certificates. So we get certified by the TÜV, which is my favorite company for whatever reason. And all of them are, you know, everyone claims like, okay, we're certified, we are secure, so, you know, there's nothing to see here. But we will later figure out if that's the truth or not. Okay, so let me quickly talk about the robot hacking from 2017 till today. So my first work was starting in 2017, and I was back when working together with Danny Wegema. And our first kind of victim was the Xiaomi vacuum robot and the Roborock S5. And some of the things which we found back then was, well, the firmware images are not signed, but are encrypted with a very weak key, which was, I think, Roborock, actually. So you could just push a custom firmware from the local network onto the device, and this was very nice for routing, because so basically you could route without disassembly, and this was the beginning of custom software and voice packages. This is what we published exactly 6 years ago, actually, at the 34C3, and also at DEF CON. The manufacturers kind of quickly realized that it's a problem, and started to kind of fix it with signatures and other countermeasures. Then, half a year later, I took my first look at Echovox robots, and how this worked is someone from who was in my talk got like from some influencer program like an Echovox robot, which was kind of like beta released, and didn't want to have it, so he gave it to me, and I was analyzing it and looked at the firmware and found the bugs in it, which was very nice. And one thing which I figured out is that the firmware is unprotected, TLS is completely broken, no integrity protection. You can just do man-in-the-middle, push a malicious OTA, and, you know, root a device. The problem is this device was very weak, so I never really was interested in publishing that, and basically abandoned the project. Then in 2019, we had to find new methods to kind of root devices, and we developed some for the Roborock S6, S5 Max, and S7. Which surprisingly still work today for whatever, so for some reason. And the new approach was like, well, we need to disassemble the device, get it into boot remote, load like a special tool into memory, and just patch the file system and get root. Again, the problem is, well, you need to kind of solder wires, and you need to, you know, break warranty seals. And we tried to avoid to breaking warranty seals, but we didn't have the choice back then. As a result of our research, the vendors started to lock down the bootloaders, which was kind of to be expected, and enforced a secure boot and started to do binary signatures. So, and they stored the keys in OPT or trust zone. So it got more and more difficult to do that. And also by the time then, the cameras and vacuum robots became more and more popular. So Roborock started also to do, you know, adding cameras for them. Then in 2021, I had another presentation at DEF CON. So if you, you know, if you're interested in like the progression, you can watch the video. Where I found a way to bypass all the Roborock security features. So it's always like, as you see, it's like always like a fight between, you know, it's a cat and mouse game in a way. And at some point I got a little bit of tired, you know, of attacking only one company. So we started to kind of look at a different company, which was Dreamy, which had very powerful devices with cameras, were very easy to root. And as they were not targeted before from us, the vendors had no countermeasures. So they didn't had implemented any security. They left SSH keys to their backend servers in the firmware and stuff like that. So we were really, really, really bad with that. As a reaction of that, Roborock introduced even more encryption and got some sneaky countermeasures. While Dreamy was basically enforcing secure boot, which was again expected, integrity checks, and did some very malicious tamper detection, which was basically soft breaking the device if it detected that we tried to root it, which was kind of like in a very sneaky way that it didn't immediately fail, but it failed randomly, so it was very, very mean. At the same time, I was taking a look again at Echovax, as Echovax started to release actually finally good hardware. And the features of these devices were kind of similar to the competition, but the prices were kind of lower, so this was a good target. As one of the devices which I analyzed was the D-Bot X1, and the first time I got it, I needed like half an hour. I had to root, and you know, basically had everything. And as a result, we had like a rooted, a modified file system, and got the emulation of the device, so we basically could, you know, play stuff to the cloud, and receive firmware updates and other things. So that made the device more a more potential target for more rooting efforts in the future. Interestingly, at independently at the same time, Braylon also started to hack Echovax and Yeti robots. So this, as you see, is potentially is very beneficial, like for our project. Now this year, we started to fight back again against all the security things, and I was giving a talk at DEF CON and at the camp. And basically, we found a new method to disable secure boot verifications by tampering the bootloader config. And the trick here is we need to trick the U-boot bootloader to kind of patch itself and just remove all the security checks. And basically, we could defeat all existing security mechanisms by any vendor who used particular chipsets. And it's applied to Xiaomi, Dreamy, Roborock, Naval, SharkRobot, and many, many more. Again, the problem is like finding new routing methods every year, every 2 years is becoming a little bit annoying. So I was kind of looking around for like for a new kind of victim in a way. One thing which becomes also like more problematic is that some companies kind of see the talks and design the devices to kind of be protected against our methods. For example, SharkRobot, they designed their main boards in 2020 with our research in mind. So we knew like, okay, we want to kind of, you know, get some debug pins and some other stuff. Which is a little bit annoying, and it took a lot of time, and nowadays we got a little bit more efficient with the methods. So in this particular case, we started to do de-obfuscation of obfuscation. SharkRobot obfuscated things, while we used X-rays to de-obfuscate things. So basically X-ray boards, and we're looking for debug pins, and we're basically following traces inside the board to kind of figure out what's going on. And this saves a lot of time because, you know, instead of using a multimeter to kind of pinpoint things, we can just, you know, X-ray it and call it a day. All right. So let's talk about the Echovax ecosystem. So why do we hack Echovax, or why, what is Echovax generally? Echovax is a company which was founded in 1998 in China, and the very original intent was to develop OEM products for other companies. But at some point they decided like, hey, in 2007 to release their own flagship model, which is the D-Bot. As you can see on the right, it's a little bit interesting. In 2020, they had 17% market share, second to iRobot. However, there's no current numbers out there, but their current market share is likely higher, and they might be even on place one, number one. And currently, Echovax market cap is 5 times higher than iRobot, so I would assume they are, you know, very, very, very much up there. Products-wise, they have at least 130 different SKUs, so for different regions, different devices. And they're not only producing, you know, vacuum robots, but as you can see, they produce also interesting things like air purifiers, lawnmowers, and, you know, all other stuff. But the cameras are disabled, don't worry, I mean, way off. Okay, let's take a quick look at, you know, the typical hardware setup of Echovax robots or vacuum robots generally. So you have typically an SoC, which is the application processor, which has connected LiDAR, which is like a laser tower, cameras, microphones. It has also like the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connected to it. On the other side, you have the MCU, which has connected the wheels, infrared sensors, fan, and drop sensors. The reason why we do that is they run on the application processor, the Linux operation system. They do the navigation via mapping and connectivity. And everything which requires real-time stuff, they run on MCU. So, for example, if you lift the robot up, it would be bad if the Linux operation system crashes and the robot does something weird. So they have like the separation of things. So you kind of see there's like multiple processes there. So to go back to our example, the initial one, the initial Echovacs robot which I looked at, the D-Bot 900 series was released in 2018, and it was based on like some single-core ARM chip, had 128 megabyte of RAM, 256 megabyte of NAND flash. And had sensors like LiDAR and infrared. But the problem was like, it was very, very weak compared to the Xiaomi robots back then. So it was the same price, but it was very weak. So we were not really interested in hacking it. The next robot which we looked at was D-Bot X1, which was released in 2022. And it had different variants of base stations. So base stations are kind of like a current thing, which is very, very nice. For example, they had auto empty functions and mob or like mob only. So they have different features. And they had interesting, product features like station control, so you can remotely control the robot if it's in a different room over, some Wi-Fi things. And you had remote view, which was very interesting for me because I saw like, okay, if you can have a camera and a microphone, that's very, very interesting. So first thing is I bought it, disassembled, broke the warranty seals, so that was a little bit sad. And I was looking inside, and I was kind of surprised that this kind of device used like an octa-core ARM chip and had like a redone core and an I acceleration. Had 2 gigabytes of RAM, 512 megabytes of SPI flash, and had like this GD32 MCU, which is kind of like, I think, some weird clone of STM32s, in case you know that. One thing which I was kind of surprised, that these devices have a Baidu DSP, which is used for voice processing. Baidu, for people who don't know that, it is kind of like the Google of China. It runs its own firmware, which was kind of interesting. They say they use it for wake word detection, but who really knows? Sensor-wise, we have a LiDAR, which is like the laser tower, which maps, creates like a map. We have a microphone array because they use it. They have like a smart assistant on the device, and we have cameras and line lasers, so that we can detect objects in front of them. And of course, obviously, a lot of infrared distance sensors. There are more devices which are basically based on this model. For example, I have here like an AirBot Z1. It was released this year. It's basically based on the same platform, but it has like an additional camera and 6 microphones, because 2 are not enough. It has some features like a Bluetooth speaker, is an air filter and humidifier, and it has a home patrol mode. And I'm not even joking about the home patrol mode. So for the people who understand German, I'm sorry for everyone who's can't read German. As you can see, I mean, this is the official ad actually from the website. And I say like, so if you're not at home, this robot will patrol anything and you can feel, secure. And because it got certified by the TÜV Rheinland, your privacy is safe, everything is good. And by the way, it has 6 microphones and you can chat with friends and family and stay in connection with them. And basically the robot can also follow people around because it has like some face recognition features, so you can keep in touch with them. It's an actual feature, so I'm not even, it's, okay. So the good thing is these kind of devices, which is great for us, they have debug ports. And one of the things is they use the same debug port back to 2019. If you need to order a part number, this is like the part number, you just Google that. And the cool thing, if you ask me, I have a lot of them here, so if you can get one. It gives us UART, it gives us 3.3 volt for some experiments. For example, we ran like an ESP32 on the robot itself. It gives us SWD and micro USB, so you can add more, things. Another group of devices which we are looking at, and as you can see, here's an example, are lawn mowing robots. As mentioned, I don't have a lawnmower or a lawn at all, a garden, but it was kind of interesting, to experiment. So I don't know why I did buy it, but I just got desperate. Navigation-wise, it's kind of interesting. So we have GPS, we have visual cameras to navigate, we have time-of-flight cameras, and we have ultra-wideband beacons. And they have features like remote view, so you can watch your garden, and they have patrol mode, which is kind of interesting. Again, for the German speakers, this is what Echovacs says itself. So it's not only lawnmower, but it's a garden guard, basically. And so you can watch your garden 24/7. And the TÜV Rheinland again has a certificate on that, so don't worry, your data is secure. So let's talk about the hardware. It's kind of interesting. So this gets more and more powerful. So this time we have an octa-core ARM chip with an AI accelerator, 4 GB of RAM, 16 GB of flash, and multiple MCUs. So like for the display, it has like a display on top and has like a knife assembly and other things. This is way more powerful than what you have typically in a Raspberry Pi. So it's kind of like interesting. Sensor-wise, we have a 360-degree camera, which is on top. It's like a dome camera. We have a front camera, we have a time-of-flight sensor, we have rain detectors, we have GPS, we have bump switches, and optionally you can put, it's prepared for LTE, so you can put like a LTE model into it. Again, we were very thankful that they give us some access ports for debugging somewhere hidden under some cover, so we got USB, UART, JTAG, and SWD. All right, so that's with hardware. Let's talk about software.
Right, so just going to give you a quick overview of the software that's in use. As Dennis mentioned, we're only really interested in robots that are running Linux, just because they're more powerful. The robot itself is using ROS Melodic Morenia, which is an open source robotic software. It's primarily used for navigation. There's also custom software developed by Ecovacs that they use, or that they call Medusa. These tasks include like cloud communication, logging, over-the-air updates, robot control, and remote camera access. So there's also some nice software packages included on the robot, including a full Python 2.7 environment, which is really helpful for extracting data. There's also AWS Kinesis in use. There's the SDK, that's for remote access outside of China, then for remote access inside of China, the Alibaba Aliyun SDK, and that's for video streaming, obviously. There's a lot of messy bash scripts, which is telling of what kind of code quality we're dealing with here. So, example, the audio record bash script. We couldn't find this being called in the firmware, but theoretically, this could be called remotely if you can find a way to do that. So AI models, they're using TensorFlow OpenCV for detection. We found a nice JSON file of their like typical objects. Our favorite is the last one. furniture, cables, and pet remains. The lawnmowers can also detect small animals and has face recon, as we touched on. Okay, so brief overview of the app structure. There's a mobile application called Ecovacs Home. This is the core functionality, add devices, delete devices, etc. There's also plugins that are downloaded every time you pair a device with the app. So these are actually know what the device is doing and can like facilitate communication between the app and the devices. So communication relations, direct communication only happens while provisioning via Bluetooth. There's a fallback for the lawnmowers. There's also NG-IoT, which is their MQTT broker, acts as a proxy between the device and app. So we wanted to take a look at how Ecovacs approaches security. We Googled around and couldn't really find a real collaborative bug bounty program, just this pretty basic web page here. They promised an acknowledgement on their public bulletin board, but we couldn't find this bulletin board. So if you've ever submitted a bug to Ecovacs, please let us know how that process went, because we're a little confused here. They're also encouraging you to send them bugs over unencrypted email, which is generally not best practice. So we also wanted to take a look at their privacy policy. They don't really guarantee that your data will stay in your locale. Generally, AWS services or regional AWS services are used. For certain models, they send photos and videos to the Ali Cloud video for AI analysis, which is interesting. There's lots of telemetry data collected, which is typical for a lot of IoT devices. So we wanted to bring up our privacy concerns. All these vacuums are equipped with like multiple cameras and microphones now, so can these be enabled remotely without user notice, and where is this data sent? Additionally, with the use of AI, we are curious, why do the robots need face recon for their AI models? And is this telemetry, and is general telemetry data being used to train their AI? Okay, so a couple of days after Dennis's DEF CON 31 talk, Echovax posted this interesting blog post asking if robot cameras can be hacked. And we found this particular paragraph interesting. Apparently, you can counter hackers from accessing video feeds by just encrypting it with AES 128. Don't think that's true, but we'll see. Okay, so now we're going to get into the findings of our research. So we wanted to see what kind of data is actually being harvested. The mobile apps and robot are pretty chatty. There's just a lot of traffic and communication between the devices and the Echovax servers. Key data collection API points are called big data and data uploads, so they're not exactly like trying to hide what they're doing. It's pretty much just out there. Examples of some of the telemetry data being collected are live coordinates of the robot locations in your home, Wi-Fi access points, network data. The robot gets very chatty if it gets stuck. It's like calling to the Echovax server for help. I don't know. It's also potentially sending AI pictures even if you haven't opted in, which is not great. Okay, so data retention in the cloud. Maps and pictures are stored in a NoSQL database. We also found that anyone who knows the object ID can access this as long as you have like a valid Echovax account and an auth token. Good security. The maps associated with these robots seem to remain on the servers, possibly indefinitely. We can't back that up at the moment because it's only been like 5 days since we deleted our account. But yeah, we found that you can access your map, the maps of your house, even after you've deleted your account. These maps also survive robot factory resets, and repairing to a different account doesn't do anything. Also, you can continue to use your auth tokens even after you deleted your account. Feature bug, who knows? So this makes access to the robot still potentially possible. Okay, so another one of our big findings was a lot of TLS mixed configurations in the application and in the robot, which we'll touch on shortly. So the Echovax home app itself tends to correctly check certificates. We did note that the robot-specific plugins don't always do that. The plugins accept self-signed certificates, which is very risky if you're using an insecure Wi-Fi network, like at an airport, you're spying on your pets, accessing your robot. This could be a problem. There's no warning or error shown in the app if self-signed certificates are being used, so the user would have no idea. We also found that it leaks user account auth tokens, some of the traffic, which would allow an attacker to access, give an attacker full access to your account for potentially up to 7 days. Right, so here's an example from the very nice tool called CertMidim. As you can see, we can see access tokens. We went ahead and decrypted that, or decoded that in JWT decode, and yeah, that is indeed our access token or authentication token. So now we can talk about the robot TLS problems.
By the way, we had for the access tokens and for the TLS direct, we have to center a lot of things because we don't want to DOS ourselves or like, you know, get ourselves into trouble. But yeah, so we have also a lot of TLS sadness in the robot itself. One thing which we figured out that sometimes MQTT and TLS connections just accept self-signed certificates. And we figured that out by a very cool tool, which is called CertMidim, which is developed by Apu, who is like thankfully sitting here in the front. It allows man in the middle. It does like a lot of tests. Like it tries to kind of sneak different certificates in and kind of see what happens. And we figured out that even OTA updates can be injected because we are downloadable over HTTP, and the only protection is MD5, which is transmitted over an insecure channel. So there's a lot of bad things happening here. And this is like one example where the robot is kind of basically uploading lots of stuff and we could just see it because it accepted our certificate. Now the question is like, we saw so much traffic, we were wondering like, why is that happening? Is it like our setup? Is our robot kind of weird? And then we were looking a little bit deeper into the firmware and figured out like, a lot of scripts had this option set for a lot of things. This is like for downloading the file. So someone didn't, you know, really care about, you know, errors, SSL errors, so we kind of did a lot of like no check, you know, certificate things, which isn't maybe not the best idea for like a production device which has cameras and microphones. All right, let's talk about the user data which is stored on a device. One thing which I figured out, and this was kind of surprising because all the other vendors by now have encrypted user data partitions, this one doesn't, so the user data partition is not encrypted. It contains lots of log files, config, maps, pictures, and everything is stored on this partition. And here are a few things which are stored there. For example, the live video pin, so if you want to access remotely the cameras, then you need to set a pin. The MD5 hash is stored on a device. For non-Moras, the Mora pin, which I will explain later for what it is stored in plain text. You see Wi-Fi credentials, see Bluetooth addresses which were used to kind of talk to the device to provision it. You see also your neighbor's Wi-Fi access points, because at some point in time it searches for like better access points around you, so it kind of does that. And some of the devices have like a smart assistant which is called Hello Eco, and you see the traffic logs of that, sometimes also transcriptions from like voice to text. The problem here is, well, factory resets don't actually erase all the information, which is kind of like a problem. Even if they would do that, in a way, then you still run into the problem with flashware leveling. I have like this paper from Amazon if you're interested in flashware leveling, where is the problem, why unencrypted data partitions are always a bad idea. Take a look at the paper. But the whole thing kind of means that if you sell a used device, even if you do a factory reset, your privacy might be at risk. All right. One thing which we found, we call it the sneaky live video attack. So how these devices work for properly legal reasons is every time you access the camera, the device will kind of give you a warning, like say like, hey, the video camera is accessed. And it will do that warning at the start of the access and every 5 minutes. How it's implemented in the firmware is basically it's a sound file played and there's a sleep and then it will just play again. The problem here is that these files are localized, so for German, for English, and they are stored in a data partition which is again not encrypted, not integrity protected. So one thing you can do potentially is you can just, you know, delete or replace the files. And so as an attack, you can just write an empty file for the warning, and this thing will never warn you ever again, which is kind of like an issue. All right, now we continue with an attack which we call the live video apocalypse, and Braylon will introduce you to that.
Cool. So as we've kind of touched on, the app allows for live video and audio feeds to be accessed remotely using the app. This functionality is provided by AWS Kinesis. The owner and shared users that have been invited to the account can access this feature as long as they have the PIN. This PIN is four digits. You're asked for the PIN before connecting, and this can only be changed and reset by the owner of the account, none of the invited users. A PIN reset requires account credentials, in theory. So here's our basic setup. We have a mobile application, the Echovax cloud, which is more or less acting as a proxy. And we have the actual robot itself, which currently has a PIN set of 1, 2, 3, 4. So the process is started. The app will ask the robot if a PIN is set and enabled. The robot will check in a configuration file if it's enabled. If it's enabled, PIN is set. It tells the mobile application that the PIN is set. So now the application decides to ask the user for the PIN. It sends over a hash, which is very secure, MD5. So now the robot will check if that PIN hash matches with its local hash. And if it does, it tells the application that the PIN is correct. If the application gets that response, you will start an AWS Kinesis WebRTC session. The robot will join that session. And now the app and the robot are in the same session, and you have an AWS Kinesis stream. So now we'll go over if a PIN is incorrect. Same process, but now the robot tells the application that the PIN is incorrect, and the process is just dropped. So we were kind of wondering, is this all client-side like verification? And are WebRTC and verification actually tied together in any way? So to test that, again, went through our same process. Robot checks if the hash matches. It doesn't match, so the robot wants to tell the app that the PIN is incorrect. But this is where we come in. We can intercept the HTTP response and tell the application that the PIN is indeed correct, even though it's not. So now we are in a stream that we should not be in because we don't have the PIN. So We then asked ourselves, can we simplify the scenario by just patching the pin query out of the app? Yes, you can. We just want to make it abundantly clear that this is not a vulnerability in AWS Kinesis. This is an issue in Echovax's like code. Like, please don't sue us, AWS. This is not your problem. This is their problem. Okay, so what did we learn from this? The pin protection is based on essentially what is the honor system, client-based authentication and AECL enforcement. The robot does not keep track of successful authentications because the robot is stateless. It doesn't know what's going on. Log of a video stream access relies on the honesty of the app. This is really bad if you can attack chain this with the TLS issue that we shared, or on shared accounts that shouldn't have access to video. This is even worse if you have deleted the sound file. So, okay, we have a quick demo. Not a live demo. So on the left is just Burp Suite. On the right is our mobile phone, which is, okay, so entering the wrong PIN. This is very heavily censored for reasons. So the PIN is wrong. So now we, dropping some requests because they're irrelevant. So now we can tamper with the response. So we take that and just paste a correct response to the, yeah. And we send that to the our application, and now we have a live video feed when we shouldn't have one. It's dropping in. So, yeah, the pin is useless.
All right. As mentioned, the pin is useless for the video function, but another question is like, well, can we get free lawnmowers? As a disclaimer, there's actually no free lawnmowers out there. Don't steal robots. But if you have one, you should maybe keep that in mind. So Echovax lawnmowers have an anti-theft mechanism where if you pick up the robot, it's locked automatically, and you need to pin to unlock it again. We can also optionally like add like an alarm trigger, which will just play some sound file, which sounds like a weird movie alarm, but it's there. The problem here is the protection is actually implemented in SOC, so on the Linux side. And the pin is stored in plain text on the robot. So technically, what someone could do is like an attacker can steal the device, dump the pin after stealing the device, and just unlock it. This is not necessarily a problem which only Echovax have, but a lot of lawn mowing companies out there have like a slightly similar issue. So that said, as a general warning, do not keep your mower outside unprotected. This might end badly. And one solution which we're looking right now on is like the improving of the locking mechanism. So if you have root access on the device, we might, you know, do something. By the way, this is also a reason why we give the talk right now and not in the summer at DEF CON, because right now all the lawnmowers should be hopefully secure somewhere in someone's garage or like shed and are hopefully not outside. This information is also not very hard to find as soon as you have root access. So this is something we need to talk about because people need to know about it. All right, let's talk about routing and disconnecting Echovax robots from the cloud. So there's some related work, so we're not the first ones necessarily thinking about a study. Thank you. Hello. Okay, maybe I can use this one.
Oh, no.
The robot. hello.
The robots took over. Knew it. Is he still working?
No.
Oh.
The robots have taken over the audio!
I turned them off, I swear. I can also speak very loudly, but I think the stream is not happy with that.
Ah. So in fact, the robots have attacked the fire alarm, and the fire alarm has decided to disconnect the speakers. It will be reconnected. We just have to be a little bit patient. So obviously, I can't use the microphone, but I will try and be loud enough that everybody can hear me. So when we're talking about hacking robots, which in some cases have blades attached to them, usually when people talk about IoT vulnerabilities, it's about data privacy and, you know, okay, the camera knows the layout of my house and how I look and what my cat looks like. In this case, I'm going to start the Q&A now while we wait for the speakers to work. Have you ever come across a concern where the lawnmower robot has been used as a weapon, or do you think it's possible to weaponize the lawnmower robots?
So we actually had an idea at some point in a sense of, I mean, this lawnmower has maps, so it kind of knows how your garden looks like, it kind of navigates through your garden. And we thought, like, can we use a lawnmower as a printer in both the good way and in the malicious way? Let's say, you know, if someone hacks your lawnmower, that they can write some very bad stuff in your yard, which will probably take you a while until it kind of regrows. Or if you can use it, like, for example, like, you know, draw art in your garden. So there's always, like, you know, a good and bad side. Generally, these lawnmowers have security features which kind of prevent them, hopefully, from driving over your kids. Let the keeper that way. So, I mean, potentially you could patch it out, but I mean, don't do that. That's kind of dangerous, I think.
So the robots, they're running essentially mobile device chipsets from a couple of years ago. They have these quad or octa-core arms. They have AI accelerators. They've got a pile of memory and a GPU. Will they run Crysis?
I would have expected Doom, but so we actually, at the camp, we were thinking about installing Doom. So the lawnmower has like a small display and like a keypad where you can basically get status information and like switch through. And we're looking into how we can port Doom onto like an STM32 like thing. We didn't have that much time, but I think it should play Doom so that while it's mowing the lawn, you can play Doom on it, I guess. Crysis, not sure if it's ARM compatible.
So we have two options. I can keep this going for another couple minutes and see the loudspeakers come on, or you can say, hey, we just speak louder and go without the loudspeakers. Preference between the two?
I mean, it doesn't matter for me. A different question is, like, if is the live stream screwed anyway, right?
I mean, the audio is being recorded by the microphones and being streamed and everything is just in here.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, yeah, I can just talk louder, I guess.
Okay. I think this decision being taken for me.
As a lot question.
This is going to look a little bit weird.
So the status is that the robots that have attacked the Rancho San Lago have only attacked it for us in the room. So everyone else in the internet is wondering why all of a sudden we put down our microphones and we're talking quietly. So what we're going to do is we're going to do the following. We're going to continue the talk for all of you in the room, especially those in the back row. There's plenty of open seats up front. I would encourage you to now move up if you're having problems hearing us. At some point, the speakers are going to magically start working again, but we're going to, in the interest of time and getting the full attention and interest that the talk deserves, continue even with the speakers not working. And with that, I give it back.
All right. Sorry for the trouble. I will try to speak a little bit louder. So generally, related work of this project, we are not necessarily the first ones who were looking into EchoVox devices and to how to disconnect from the cloud. There was a project some time ago which called Sux, which was a very good name. It was a Python client interface that allows remote control of the robots. It was basically talking to the cloud and was basically emulating whatever the app is doing. However, this project was abandoned in 2021. Another project which is very interesting for us was Bumper. It's a standalone implementation of the Echorax servers. It was basically you can connect the robot and the official app to the software, and allows you the remote control of the robots. As we mentioned before, the Echorax MQTT broker is actually basically just a proxy which forwards one thing to another, so the logic is actually implemented in the app and on the device. However, Bumper required DNS redirection and SSL CA imports on the phone, which is nowadays very difficult for current Android phones. It was confirmed to work for all the models like pre-2020. Another product which works very well is the Home Assistant plugin. It's integrated in Home Assistant. It kind of is based on the PI Sux library, and it connects to the Echorax cloud and allows remote control. So it's kind of like does the same thing again, emulates the app. All right, let's talk about countermeasures which Echorax did to kind of prevent sneaky people to kind of figure out what's going on. First, we found many interesting binaries are obfuscated, and they use a lot of XOR and byte shifting to kind of hide strings and to make it very, very difficult. We assume that we kind of knew that it's easy to extract a firmware from the device, so we wanted to make it as hard as possible to figure out how it exactly works. They added a lot of anti-debugging features, for example, that detection in binaries for LD preload, and they detected also ptraces in debuggers. At some point, for some devices, they enabled secure boot and Android verified boot, but it's only enabled for some devices, and they use the Mverity to protect the root file system. So the question is, like, how do we get a root shell on a device? Well, we can get a login shell at least over UART. I mentioned before that we have the bug bins. The problem here is that every device has a different root password, and it's not hard-coded. It's set at boot time, so it's like dynamically for every robot. The function how this is set is very well hidden and obfuscated, and the responsible program for that is EchoPassword. The way how we compute the password is kind of interesting, and it reminds me a little bit of Dreamy. So we take the model number, they add some two random MAC addresses, which I think are probably from some developer back in the day which needed some random numbers, so they just use the MAC addresses of your computers, of the ASUS stack computers actually. And then it takes a serial number, creates a SHA-256 over it, creates a base64, and that's a root password. In case you want to do that for your devices at home, I have like a generator for some of the devices, so you can just go there, just generate it. Firmware updates are kind of interesting for us too. The firmware is only encrypted, but not really signed, and the encryption key is dynamically computed. So it differs by firmware version, metadata, and device model, and the algorithm is well hidden and protected against debugging. And here, Timstar was a great help because he is very good with ARM binaries, and he basically reverse engineered the algorithm. What happens here is that the AES128 CBC initialization vector and the key is derived from the string, where we just use some random format string. We fill it up with some random data. For whatever reason, they put an email address in there. And then they kind of split up the string and use one half for initialization vector and the other one for the key. So now we need to talk about persistence. So how we can be, stay persistent on the device. One way is that we can modify the root file system. This works for a lot of models which don't have implemented integrity checks of the root file system. For example, the Dboard X1 doesn't have it. And there the partitions are just SquashFS partitions which are kind of packed in JFS2. And I think we assumed like, okay, it's so difficult to kind of puzzle it out, so we don't care. So it doesn't have signatures or any verification, so we can just unpack it, repack it, and call it a day. One thing which we saw is that the verification of security features kind of depends on what kind of SDK version we used or what kind of SoC we used. So it's kind of like really random. You couldn't really tell for a particular device what's going on. So let's talk about AutoStart. They thankfully have forgotten some debugging feature in the firmware. What it does is basically, even for devices which have secure boot and verifications and everything, at boot up, we check a folder, if the folder exists, which is data autostart. Again, data is not protected, it's like unencrypted. And if it exists, it will just run any shell script which is in that folder. So it's not encrypted. And the only limitation which we have here is for some reason, they disabled it on some device, they knew about it, but for some other device they didn't. So it's kind of like totally random, probably whoever owned the project kind of did some weird things. So let's talk about how we can survive factory resets, and this is both like a good and bad thing. Factory resets don't actually nuke the data partition. What they do is like they just delete all the files. They do some backups of some files and restore them afterwards. So the actual file system is never recreated. One of the ideas which we had is like, hey, we can just make files immutable, so they would survive like an rm-rf. And with change attributes, you can just like add an immutable flag. And what happens with an immutable flag is it can't be deleted, so it will survive factory resets and firmware updates. So let's talk about some future work. Generally, we try to figure out if we can use ROS directly as an open source robot. So this might be something which people who use ROS on a daily basis might able to do. We want to see if we can revive existing projects to work with modern robots. Another thing which is currently in process is the port of Valetudo, which is like a tool which runs on the robot and gives you like exactly the same features as in the app, but it's like all in one contained package that we want to port it to Echovax. Currently, this is supported by Xiaomi, Roborock, Dreamy, but Echovax has a slightly different protocol, so we need to implement a new transport, and it's kind of like work in progress. And it might take a while, so please don't ask when it's done. I'm not the developer, so don't blame me. The other thing for the lawnmowers in particular, we want to find effective ways to prevent theft. For example, we might just change the root password ourselves to something which is different, so that whoever steals it can just, you know, can log in onto the device. Generally, we try to find persistent ways for all existing models, and we need more people also to look into shady stuff in the firmware and in the apps. And this is where we also kind of need your help if you are interested in like rooting devices and you have a device, you know, just maybe take a look. And there's a lot of interesting things to find, especially like the record underscore audio SH kind of gives you like a very, you know, interesting idea. All right, let's talk about certifications, and Braylon is the expert here.
How about that? Okay, so there are several types of cybersecurity certifications that exist in the world. There's some international standards, US standards, regional standards. Echovax boasts like just a couple of certifications from TÜV Rheinland, which seems to be everyone's favorite here. Standards set by ETSI 303645 must be met. Hardware and software certifications are apparently they claim those. The mobile application also like has some certs or some framework listed. So are these standards actually being met? From our research, no, not really. There's a few that we found that we can say without a doubt these aren't being met. So validity of certifications. Should authoritative security certifications even exist? Like, we don't know, but it seems to be like more of a false sense of security for both consumers and vendors. Pen testers will always miss vulns. It's just kind of a reality of the job. It's a time box assessment. They're humans and yeah, you can't get everything. But we do raise our eyebrows at the amount of low-hanging fruit that we found in the Echovax ecosystem. So can you rely on certifications? No, not really. Like, all of these devices have been compromised, regardless of what TÜV Rheinland's certifications they have.
All right. Let's talk about some takeaway lessons from this talk. Generally, you need to be careful the fuse devices. They might come already with a pre-compromised hardware firmware, and it's for you. It's very difficult to verify. There might be some mean people who buy a device, you know, put some malicious things onto them, send it back to Amazon, and you're the next one who's like getting it. If you want to sell a device or dispose it, try at least to do a factory reset. These kind of devices, or IoT devices generally, smart speakers, same case, contain a lot of sensitive data. Check the manual how to do factory reset. We had in the past some problems where vacuum robots were kind of a little bit weird about how you do factory reset. And important information here is like a Wi-Fi reset doesn't delete any data. It's basically used to kind of put a device from one Wi-Fi to another, so make sure that you do a factory reset. However, don't rely on a factory reset all the time, because factory resets might leave a lot of data behind. The other thing which we need to talk about, and this might be like a little bit problematic for some people, is choose your partners and roommates very wisely. As we just demonstrated today, devices can be weaponized for stalking. If you have shared accounts, make sure that you kind of keep them up to date. Like if someone left your life, basically just delete them from the accounts. Change passwords. When in doubt, do like a factory reset and reprovision the devices with a fresh account. One thing which we found generally in the past, today, nowadays, the vendors become a little bit more smart. Do not keep your devices in unprovisioned mode. A lot of people are like paranoid and say like, okay, I don't want to connect the device to the cloud because then you know the Chinese or the Americans cannot access me. Make sure that it actually disables the provisioning mode, otherwise you might have an issue. What is the issue? Well, if your device is in provisioning mode, it kind of announces like, hey, I'm an Echovox or like a Roborock or whatever device, I'm unprovisioned. So some of your mean neighbors can see it and decide like, hey, I can just put the credentials of my Wi-Fi into them. So then the robot will happily connect to the account of your friendly neighbor, and they might be able to potentially access the live stream. So think about what kind of unprovisioned devices you have and make sure that they disable that mode after some time. Nowadays, a lot of devices do, but don't always do. All right, as a summary, we got routing methods for the most for most of the released Echovox robots. So we use their UART interface and authentication. And for some of the devices, we can get persistence and operation like of a custom firmware. Now we can validate and verify the vendor's claims, and as you saw, it didn't look very good. There are a lot of privacy and security issues here. It applies to all sorts of things in the app, in the robot itself, and in the cloud. And it's very clear that the certifications didn't help to prevent that. But having root access allows us to do further research into IoT and AI and both look into privacy aspects, but also use this kind of devices to kind of build our own things. As a final note, please don't use your knowledge for bad things. Help others if they need help with routing. If unsure, please ask first before breaking devices. Some people get a little bit excited and might destroy their devices. All right, some acknowledgements. I would like to thank Danny Wegemer, with whom I started the research. I would also like to thank Sören Bayer, who is the developer of Valetudo. I would like to thank Timster for helping me with all the reverse engineering and all the testers in the community. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I will also forward messages to Braylon, who's a little bit shy on social media. And yeah, thank you very much. And thank you for being here.
So I think that having successfully weathered the attack from our robot overlords on our sound system, we can give Braylon and Dennis another fantastic round of applause for finishing out the talk nearly on time. We have time for questions, even though we're over the time slot, because there is not a following talk. And this may sound strange, but if you have a question that you would like to ask now, I would ask that you go to one of the microphones in the room. And even though we're not going to be able to hear the question from the microphone, the internet will be able to hear the question, and maybe the internet will have some questions. And I see that already there's a question from the internet and no comment on the robot uprising on our audio system.
I'll try.
So speak into the mic, but
yes.
Just loud.
I think it's on, yes. This is one question from the internet. Is there any anecdotal evidence or are there any publications that these devices have been used maliciously in the past as backdoors into home or corporate networks?
So the question was, is there any evidence that these devices have actually been used maliciously in the past?
So not to my knowledge necessarily, but one thing which kind of made me a little bit nervous was that after my DEF CON talk this August, some people from some US organizations came to me and asked like, hey, we are wondering, can we find people with these devices if they have cameras, like, in countries? And I was like, okay, if we are able to find these things, then people who have like a lot of time and a lot of money can find these things too. So while I'm not aware of examples, I definitely think that someone is already using it right now.
From the front here. And please speak both into the microphone and loudly, if possible.
I try my best. So thanks for the great talk. The face recognition and AI capabilities made me wonder, do you know by any chance which ML, which neural network is running there? I mean, TensorFlow tells me that it's probably some kind of YOLO off the shelf. But do you know which?
Yeah. Do you know the framework used for the machine learning running on the devices? For instance, is it something like YOLO, or how are they doing the face detection?
So we saw for some devices, not necessarily Echovox, we saw that we use YOLO. There's like another vendor which creates a lot of like OEM products, like for Wise and Wyoming and stuff like that. It's like free robotics, and they have actually machine learning files which say like YOLO and all the other things. I think for the case of Echovox and also for Dreamy and Roborock, I think we're actually running very expensive own models somehow. From what I heard when I was working with the journalists, is that they collect like the pictures, they kind of reproduce, like we have huge rooms where we reproduce like scenarios and kind of train the machine learning model on their own stuff. If that's completely true, I don't know if they claim that they don't use any user input, but who knows. So these kind of companies, I think, are big enough that they kind of spend a lot of money for that.
Thanks.
Thank you for your great talk. Has there already been analysis of the data sending behavior of these robots? Or is this also an open research field? Like, how much data is uploaded, video data and photos or stuff?
So the robots and the apps are extremely chatty. If you just open the Echovox app, it will send like a kind of telemetry thing, like wherever you're clicked and everything, every second, basically. For the robots, it's very similar that they, it's like every 10 seconds, we send like a huge data package with like where it is, what they saw, like also like your furniture alignment and everything. So by looking at the HTTPS traffic, we can just literally see like, okay, this is like uploading the stuff into this data collection. One of the interesting things which we saw is that we believe that some of the data collection honeypots basically is not really used by the application, so we just kind of collect the data, but the app is not necessarily using them. It's kind of like, so we have some collection mechanism, but we don't know what we're using it for. It's kind of tricky also to, we have devices, but we didn't, you know, enable all the options because the app, for example, has like an opt-in feature for AI, which we didn't do. We saw some picture uploads, but I wonder if we would see more if we would have to, you know, enable more features. It's a kind of tricky question where, I mean, my goal is to get root access. Everything else is optional.
Is that behavior also documented on some blog post or somewhere, or is that like only when talking to some people with knowledge?
Yeah, I think it's the documentation is always very hard. As someone who's like maintaining like generation websites and like roots devices, documentation is usually the thing which takes a lot of time. I'm not very good at that. It's a tricky thing. I mean, worst case, just ask, I guess, or just reproduce it yourself. It's like for these kind of devices, I feel it's very, very trivial to do, especially, you know, you get free SSL traffic without touching the device even. I mean, that's a great thing.
Is there another question from the internet currently? The internet is quiet, so.
Thank you for the inspirational.
You're also very quiet.
Thank you for your inspirational talk again. I got two questions. So first of them would be like, maybe I haven't got it in entirely correct, but the differences between the Yeezys and the Evovox are more on the hardware side or software side?
We're basically the same. It's just a different brand. I think it's like slightly cheaper, but it's, I think in the US, we say like Yeezy by Echovox. So it's just like a branding thing.
Okay, thanks. And how is the best approach to contribute to your work?
If you have a robot, just root it and share with people how you got it and what you found. I think this is like the best kind of thing. Distribute knowledge that so we don't have to document things. It's like, you know, like I mentioned, I have like lots of nowadays lots of devices which we are looking at, and it's very, very hard to keep track. So we need people who actively look into. Oh. So we need to have people who would actively look into things, and this would be very helpful, just to know. I mean, sometimes we miss even things ourselves. So we notice in some different other device that it had like some very sketchy things. It would be great if people would find it.
right, thanks.
Great, we have time for one more question, which is convenient because there is one more person waiting to ask a question.
Hi, thanks for the talk, really interesting. As someone who works in robotics and also owns one of these Echovox robots, I always wondered how can I access it? So is there a good way, do you have it documented, how to route it and actually get access to the ROS graph that you described as present there? Is it, can I find it on your website or?
Yeah, so eventually I will upload it. I have also the adapters, like the things which you can use to kind of put it in. I have them here, so if you just see me in the next couple of days, just ask me, I might have some. Generally, I will probably do in a year, all the documentation stuff. The stupid thing what happened to me is I used Windows for some stuff, and while it was not there, it did a Windows update and stuck now in a BitLocker preboot, so I can't do too much right now, but eventually it will be documented, and on robotinfo.dev you will have also the pinout and everything how to access it.
Great, thank you.
All right, let's, for one final time, this time with the assistance of the audio system, thank our wonderful speakers, Braylon and Dennis, for their fantastic talk.